Hello, welcome again to another fine episode of the Tombstone Podcast. Podcast where we talk about video games, the video game industry, and whatever else we want to talk about. My name's Devin.
I'm Kevin.
My name's Dominic.
And Zach.
And again, this week we have our beautiful guest. Go ahead, reintroduce yourself again.
Hey, it's Joe.
All right.
Hell yeah.
So for the sake of continuity, we're gonna oh my gosh. All right. So it's the same day for us. It's the next week for whoever's listening to this. We're gonna go around robin. What games are you excited for? We'll start with Kevin.
Yeah, so I recently played Strider again for the first time in 4 years, probably. This is the PS4 era remake of Strider, or I guess just another installation, but it's just called Strider. Makes it very confusing. But very great game. I immediately fit back into it. It was like putting on a glove. It just fits so perfectly. I was like, oh yeah, I remember. You jump and then you dash and you jump. Okay. And then just, it feels really good to play. And I really missed it more than I realized. So I'm very happy to have started that up again.
All right. Dominic.
I was just recently playing Link's Awakening, but I'm super excited actually to get back into some older games. I was thinking of doing like some well, not older games like year wise, but I was thinking of going back to like Darkest Dungeon, like some of those really cool indie games. Maybe doing another episode of like another playthrough of Hollow Knight or just some older, like cool indie stuff that's been out for a while.
Cool. All right, Zach.
I'm just gonna reuse my answer from the last episode. Real
Oh,
looking
Jesus
forward to
Christ.
new updates to Destiny.
All right. Solid, respectable. What about you, Joe?
In terms of stuff that I'm excited for, I do not have a Switch, so any game that's out on Switch right now, I am just like chomping at the bit to like finally cash out and get all bone in it. I've been playing kind of just like brain candy games since I haven't had a whole lot of time to sink in anything. So like pulled out Tetris on the 64, just like get some retro console stuff going on there. Some old school Mario Kart just to like, hey, for 10 minutes while I have a short attention span, let me catch something real quick. So
Cool. Yeah, I started a new game of the Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu, because I haven't played since it was released, so I need to get back in it, play it again.
same
So
here.
that's yeah, that that's what I'm working on. So we're this is a continuation of our Elder Scrolls discussion. And if you didn't listen to last week's episode, then turn off this one and go listen to that one, please, because there's a lot of good discussion on kind of a little bit about the evolution of how Elder Scrolls kind of got here, especially with Morrowind being the bridge. And today, I think we're going to talk about if it wasn't Morrowind that got you into Elder Scrolls, then it was most likely Oblivion. And if it wasn't that, then it was Skyrim. So this is the one that I know Joe has the most time on. This is the one that I didn't start on. I started on Morrowind, but I put a hell of a lot of time into Oblivion. So we'll just go ahead and open discussion, whatever y'all want to start with as first experiences, however much experience you have with it, whatever. Whoever wants to start.
I was going to ask, Kevin, did you have any Morrowind ex Oblivion experiences whatsoever?
Just the littlest bit. I started in the prison like every other goddamn Elder Scrolls game, and made my cu character customization, which this is one of those character customization screens that has too many goddamn options, and I was immediately overwhelmed. And I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to do this, this, and this, and we're done. We're out of here. I just don't look at me. I'm hideous.
Yeah.
But the general experience was, you know, I get up and, you know, I get out of there. I do the basic stuff. And I was like, okay, so it's a big expansive world. Let's just go futz about. And because that's my approach, I almost immediately deviate from the main quest as soon as I can. And then I remember just kind of rushing around and then realizing the athletics and acrobatic, like how the skills work, where it's like you get better at a skill by doing it. So I was like, oh, well, shit, I'm just going to run and jump through the whole fucking land. Like, that's just how I'm going to move until I'm maxed out.
Yeah.
And I remember sneaking a lot, too, to build up my sneak. So I would just like alternate between hopping around in the hills and sneaking down hallways just to get those skills up. And then I really didn't get to do too much. Like I said, I've only gotten in like maybe a couple of hours, but it seemed like there were a lot of possibilities, but I didn't really get to experience the execution of all those ideas.
Yeah, that's fair to say. Cause I mean the game, something, one note that I had made, while playing back through it again before the episode and, things like that, is that there's no singularly perfect way to play the game. Like, there's a lot of different customization options for your character where you can sort of be what you'd like to be roleplay wise, and it helps out the game. And it doesn't make the game like a min-max situation. Kind of like how I know we talked about what was the Battle Spire, right? That one is very like min-maxy, and you know, it was just a good refresh for this one. Zach, I know you haven't played a whole lot at all, right? Like, you didn't start until Skyrim, right?
Right.
Okay. And so that's, so Joseph, being our sort of Oblivion wizard, right? Talk us through your process for Oblivion. Cause I know you've got a lot of experience.
You got a lot of nerve.
You got a lot of nerve coming on this show.
I got a lot of Oblivion gumption going on there.
Yeah.
So I have two different sets of experiences with Oblivion. The first one was my introductory experience. The second one was when I finally reinstalled it from Steam. The first time I was ever introduced to Oblivion, from other games like Legend of Zelda series and stuff like that, I always gravitated towards these sort of more free-to-roam, open-worldish type games where you can still experience the story, but it's not like linear where you're here and then you have to go there. And it's very clear what you have to do. So there was a friend of mine visiting, and I guarantee you that, you know, Dominic and Devin, y'all were somewhere in the mix.
Sure.
But I remember a friend of ours came over with a laptop, and I was like, hey, what are you playing? And it's like, oh, it's Oblivion, whatever. And I'm like, I had no idea what it was, and actually he gave me a go at it. I was probably playing on his character, or I made a character and then immediately like got out really quick, and I don't really remember the introduction with the sewers, but I just remembered being introduced to this world where I was just a character who could run around and wield a sword, and the first thing that I did was try and fight all the guards and break in to people's houses and steal yeah. stuff and all that kind of fun stuff that goes on in early Elder Scrolls run, just because I had never encountered a game where you could do that before. And my first vivid experience of Oblivion was absolutely getting shredded by this Imperial Guard, and then also not realizing what being over encumbered meant. So I went around and stole all this stuff, and I had like 8 swords and a couple like sets of clothing and whatever. And I was like, why am I so slow? And I ended up like drowning and being shot at the same time because I couldn't move. And I thought I'd hide in the water so the guard couldn't get me. So to say the least, that was my introduction, but it wasn't very substantial. My second big experience with Oblivion was, besides playing it on Xbox, which is sort of growing up playing Oblivion, putting it back on PC, has been great because I've kind of taken that as, like we've talked about in the last episode, an opportunity to get back to old school, puristic RPG video game playing. Sure. You know, I have a spiral notebook where I keep a journal of things that my character's doing, and I plot maps and quests and stuff like that, and just really sink my teeth into the world. I made sure to take as absolutely long as possible to do the sewers because it's just so iconic for me. So now it's nostalgic, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, we were talking in the previous episode about Morrowind added this necessity of keeping track of your stuff so much that for some it might be a little off-putting. But I liked that Oblivion, obviously the quest log, you know, the implementation of a standard quest log, with some like waypoints and such, was pretty helpful at its time. But I'd kept in mind that what you had told me about, like, that you do have like a journal for your, that where you can immersify yourself in your character's experiences, and I really appreciated that. Not only was Oblivion the type of game where you could still do that after all these years of it being out, but that you also did sort of continue that more true to origin style of playing these RPGs, where it's like you make the catalog for yourself. And like it's funny to me is like the only way, like, that these different, like, these old game guides, right, the only way that they could come out and unofficially and stuff like that was by a bunch of dudes, a bunch of people who played these games would come together and would like make notes and draw maps and all these different things and say, and release it on like on a forum and be like, hey guys, trust us, this is the way that you do it, you know, like the idea of like almost forum multiplayer styled gameplay of like, I don't know how to do this, and so I'm gonna ask my buddy because he has a journal about it. You know what I mean? It's just really interesting to see for this type of game.
Well, and just to note at the end, because then I definitely want Devin to speak to his experiences, because, I mean, like I said about Morrowind, and I can't get the details clear about the chronology, but I knew Oblivion was actually the first one that I had been introduced to in terms of Elder Scrolls. I don't think it's so much like I'm trying to invent something that's not there. I think the thing more so that I'm speaking to for playing Oblivion is that, like, the reason I like it so much and why I keep coming back to it is because if you, even in just exploring, if you take it seriously, like, I remember as soon as you get out of the sewers, there are like three immediate places that you can go to. It's like you can either go back to the city and explore all that type of stuff, you can go across the water and there's an old shrine, or you can go to the right and there's like an old keep with like bandits and goblins and stuff like that in it. And it's like, if you take it seriously in terms of like, I just got out of the sewers and I'm in a strange place and I don't know what's going on, then it's actually, you know, I got scared by it. And there's an imp, the little flying sort of demon looking thing, which most people would scoff at. But like, I don't know, it scared me because I was walking in I was in that little shrine place as soon as you get out of the sewers. And it just snuck up on me. So I don't know. It's not like I'm trying to make it more than it is. I just think I really appreciate what they've done in Oblivion. I really like it. So Devin, you want to talk about your experiences?
Yeah. So actually, I was just kind of reminded about one of like the things. Do y'all remember G4 TV?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So there was. They would just kind of, so G4 TV, if anyone doesn't know what that is, because it's a defunct TV show, and it was just a gaming TV show, or it was TV X Play channel. I think it was a TV channel. So X Play is the specific channel show that I'm talking about, and they would just talk about, they would review different games, they would do hints, tips, and tricks and stuff like that. So I remember they had a segment where they talked about the Vampire Cure questline. Because the Vampire Cure questline in Oblivion is really interesting. And I just remember, for some reason, that's a vivid part of my memory of Oblivion, is watching that before I even played the game or knew what it was. Had no idea. Didn't know that it was tied to the Elder Scrolls franchise, because I believe I played Morrowind before this. And just seeing this, like, the voice acting, the characters, and, like, going through this whole questline, and the fact that this questline existed in this game was mind-blowing to me. And kind of the evolution of character creation in Elder Scrolls so far has been, you've had stats, you pick stats, and then Daggerfall added all these skills, and then slowly they've been refining these skills, because like I mentioned in last episode, that you had 9 language skills, you had like 3 different speech skills, you had some random skills that, like, you had swimming and running, you had climbing, you just had all these random skills, and they've kind of been consolidating them and making it more streamlined. And because you could just add points to whatever skills. You had your major, your minor skills, and your miscellaneous skills. And then Oblivion just has your major skills, and everything else is minor skills. So only your major skills in Oblivion level you up. So it really kind of, your character creation is that much more important. In Morrowind, you can make, okay, I'm going to be a mage that kind of has a, can rely on melee if he needs to. Like, he has some melee skills that he can rely on for, you know, because I'm going to run out of magicka, so I want to have something I can fall back on. Well, in Oblivion, you don't get that. You get, here's 7 skills that I'm going to pick, and this is my character. This is what I am role-playing as. If I'm going to be a mage, I'm going to be a mage. There's no, you can't be jack of all trades. You have to carefully pick what you want to be. And that is, I really enjoy that, because that means every single time that you play the game, you can pick a unique way to play it that you've never played before. It's like, okay, I'm going to take no combat skills. Like, I'm going to take sneaking, lockpicking, speechcraft, restoration, mysticism. Like, I'm going to take that stuff and just see what happens. Because, I can get better at everything else if I want to, but it doesn't level me up. So my health's going to stay the same. All the enemies are going to stay the same. That's actually a really interesting thought. That all of these enemies are going to stay the same level because they scale to your level. And I'd be really curious as to see how that would go. But like you say, it's like you have your whole tutorial, because there's actually a tutorial area now. There's a tutorial area in Morrowind, but it's it's not really a tutorial area per se. But in Arena and Daggerfall, you just have a starting dungeon that you start in. In Oblivion, you have a starting dungeon, but it actually teaches you everything as a tutorial would teach you. It teaches you very hand-holdy ways sometimes, where it's like, oh, here's how you move and here's how you look. And then it teaches you, oh, you're low on health, you should do this. You're low on magicka, you should do this. You found a nice piece of armor, you should put that on. You can sneak around enemies, you can do this and that. And it builds, the way that you build your character is really interesting to me, because usually it's just give it all front-loaded, like, make your character. Well, in Oblivion, it's you meet the Emperor. You kind of go through the dungeon like that. He's like, oh, I saw it in my dreams, and you pick your star sign, which gives you special powers, whatever it may be, maybe stat increases or like an a fortify spell or something like that. And then really towards the end, like one of the last people that you talk to in the dungeon, what do you think that, I forget what exactly he tells you, but he basically is like, pick a class. And then he comments on the class that you pick as well, which is kind of funny. So like if you're an orc and you pick like a mage class, he's like, not at all what I was going to expect, but okay. And then, yeah, so then you like you said, you leave the first dungeon, the sewers, and immediately it's wide open for you to go wherever you want. Open up your map, and you're in the middle of the map, the dead center of the map. So everything is within your reach. Everything's within your grasp. And then you notice on your compass a little red dot, a little quest marker.
The first in the series.
The first in the series. That, to me, kind of negates the whole, because as someone who's just starting out, you can be like, oh, well, this thing's telling me I should go here. It might be wise, you know, let me just go ahead and follow that and see what happens. Just follow it and see what happens and where it leads me. And that immediately already kind of breaks the whole role-playing experience for me, because for me it's like, there's a quest marker, fuck it, might as well follow it. And I really wish there was an option. I think there's a mod to turn off quest markers, because again, your journal does a really good job of telling you what you need to, where you need to go, and what you need to do. Not as good of a job as Morrowind does, because Morrowind relied strictly on just telling you where to go and not showing you where to go. But it's that we're already on that other side of role-playing that I was talking about with Morrowind, where Morrowind's that bridge, that gap in between super hardcore, very complex, whatever, and bring it more casual, and Oblivion is your first casual experience with RPGs.
Well, and I like to comment on some of the points that you've made. You know, the character creation process to me almost felt like Dungeons and Dragons, and especially with the changes that they've made across the Bethesda series and even across the D&D series. Or editions, I mean, you know, like they were able to simplify it a little bit in terms of your character. It's definitely complicated for sure. As I know, like Kevin talked about, like the expansiveness of your character is a little off-putting in some cases. But I mean, I think they shied away from, like, I know like Pathfinder, right, talks about like, well, you can be skilled in lore, right, but which kind? And there's like 8 different kinds of lore that you can choose from to be knowledgeable about. And instead of spelling out all those different things, they kind of bring it together, and it's like, okay, well, it's athletics and it's acrobatics, you know. But I go back to one of the points I made about Assassin's Creed Origins, right? Like for Origins, it was that like you could either follow those quest markers, or there's so much that is in that quest log, and there's so much that's in the dialogue that the NPCs give you that you can ignore them if you'd like. And for me, I think I try to make a conscious effort of just ignoring them. Like Breath of the Wild as well. I usually like to play Breath of the Wild such that I don't use my mini map, and I don't even use my regular map. Like I'm just completely blind to the world.
I do the pro HUD where it's just like, I don't have anything on it, and if I need to look at the map, I have to open up my map.
Well, yeah. and even then, I don't even go to the Sheikah Towers, so my map isn't even available to me if I open it. You know, I think part of it is if you just sort of make a more conscious decision to ignore those quest markers and stuff, which it's difficult too because it's
but
a big part.
That's like that's yeah. like a that's okay. I'm speaking from experience, and I'm putting these handicaps on myself. That these aren't
that's
handicaps.
True.
These aren't handicaps that I can actually put on myself in the game. As far as well, with not having a quest marker, that's something that's like I can't really have that handicap in Oblivion. But I guess when it comes to Breath of the Wild, it's like, okay, yes, I can just straight up just not uncover any parts of my map if you want it to.
That's a good separator. I should have mentioned that. Well, and it's because, like, you know, for Oblivion, I imagine as a first timer for Oblivion, it's like, especially in that, especially as it came out after Morrowind, you know, that I definitely observe that, like, that is definitely the turning point. I think after Oblivion, and especially at around its time too, because there weren't many other things that were like, "Hey, here's exactly where you got to go." You know what I mean? And going back to Assassin's Creed, we talked about how they even went as far as like giving you, like, basically a GPS navigation of where to go for your next quest. But I can definitely appreciate that they did give you a little bit of both. In Oblivion, for sure. And what were you going to say, Joe?
Well, no, I was just going to say it's great, you know, to bring a Breath of the Wild, because to me, it really depends on approach, because if you're doing a kind of games on rails approach to Oblivion, I guess, or Breath of the Wild, like if you're taking it as something where, well, the game is indicating to me that in order to progress in the type of storyline that it wants to present to me, I have to respond to it in a particular way, which is like, Link, you gotta go here, or like take the amulet to Joffrey, and here I'm gonna like in Sharpie put a big star on your map so you can't miss it.
Yeah.
And I think in both of these games, but to anchor it specifically in Oblivion, the reason why now going back and playing it, I purposefully let myself get so caught up in everything that's around as soon as you start off the game and outside of that. Is because I think that's what made the first playthrough of the game so great and vivid, is because if you're taking the approach where it's like, okay, well, clearly the game is indicating that I have to go here, and if you follow that, you're immediately led through a world that you can tell has a lot of detail in it. Mm-hmm. And that's just going back to my point earlier about just taking it seriously, which I guess is a strange way to put it, but just realizing that there's so much stuff there that needs to be seen besides like what the little arrow is pointing you to. And just to mention, since we're talking about like personal ways to try and get rid of stuff like that would make the game either easier or more streamlined, I tried to do a role play way to get out of it. Like I tried to try and get in the mindset of which is a little bit difficult because, again, you don't really have a background or anything like that since you're the nameless, faceless prisoner.
Right.
But for me, the idea of, okay, well, apparently the Emperor was someone very important, and he's clearly just died, and I don't know if anybody else knows that, so I don't know the state of the world that I'm in as soon as I emerge from it. And that's what I was saying, going back to the idea of the first creature meeting when you get out of the sewers, for me was this strange demonic flying creature of the imp. And so that was kind of like, if I'm trying to force my hand into staying out of the main quest line as much as possible, that was really helpful just because they put so much detail and content, like micro content, in that game. Mm-hmm. But I mean, again, yeah, I mean, aside from that, I mean, I'd be looking for a mod that would take away stuff like that altogether in terms of map markers, because sure. I mean, you're gonna get there anyway just from exploring in the world, but I mean that's to me what I've always enjoyed about it. And you could, I guess, make the same argument for Breath of the Wild. I mean, it's a very big game, it's extremely detailed, and if you follow the main quest line, you're gonna see that there's a lot of depth to it. You're just gonna miss a lot of the hidden places if you're just following the main quest. So
yeah, and I feel like for these things, like with Oblivion in particular, it's just the presence of that quest marker immediately affects you whether you're saying I'm going to ignore the quest marker or not, because there's immediately a choice of, there's a quest marker, am I going to do what the game is telling me, or am I going to fight about? there's a choice immediately being made, whereas if that was never presented to you, you would do what you would do, you know, uninformed. You would act as you would in that situation. So I think that like really just the presence of it colors you, it colors your experience, because you have to actively go, I'm going to follow that quest marker, or I'm not going to follow that quest marker. So yeah. I think that no matter how much you want to resist it, it's going to affect how you play the game somehow.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll continue this. We're going to break for ads, and then we'll continue this because I have some really good comparisons to Morrowind that I want to talk about. Just really Absolutely. Just the quest marker. I don't know why it's a pretty big thing that I want to hammer on, but we'll go to ads and we'll come back and talk more about it.
For sure.
All right. Yeah, hello, we're back, and we're going to continue our discussion of, I was going to talk about more about the, what's it called, quest marker thing. So here's kind of my whole reasoning of the quest marker is, in Morrowind, whenever you first start up and you get into Saedonin, the first place is Saedonin, and you're directed to go talk to this guy because he kind of knows this area of this town, and he might be able to tell you how to get to Balmora. Go talk to that guy, and he's like, oh, go use the Silt Striders. Or you can walk. Would not recommend that. So then you go to the Silt Striders, you get familiar with the fast travel, well, their form of fast traveling, and you go to Balmora, and you go talk to the Caius Cassades, and he's like, go do other shit. Like, literally go explore the world. And then that's, you don't get that same feeling in Oblivion. In Oblivion, it's like, here's a red marker. I'm gonna follow that red marker. And I can literally open up the map and fast travel to, what is it, Shadenhall, I think. I think you like fast travel directly. You can immediately open up the map and fast travel to all the cities.
Mm-hmm.
So fast travel there, go talk to Joffrey. And he's like, oh, this and that. Go to Kvatch. Fast travel to Kvatch. Do that. So, like, it kind of takes out that element of... It easily can take out that element of exploring the world. Because it's not like... Like, if you couldn't immediately fast travel to the cities, you would have to manually travel there. Maybe you should do some quests, buy a horse, get geared up, and then head out. Like...
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, would be the proper way of doing it, instead of saying, okay, you need to get here, and it's right by this place that you can travel to. So just go ahead and travel there and go talk to the guy. And it just, you just immediately start getting away from the whole RPG element and being able to explore. Not as bad as we get into with Skyrim, but still, like, it's there.
Yeah.
Well, sure, and I think the interesting thing is that, I mean, one of the things that has emerged from, say, a game like Dark Souls is, like, the game necessarily has these parameters that the player's response to it has to be, get good. So it's like, and I'm saying that with the anticipation of, let's say you were to introduce something like Oblivion from Morrowind, and there were, let's say, no fast travels and no quest markers. You, of course, have a large number of people saying, like, oh, it's so hard to find anything, I can't find anything, or anything like that. Like, why could not we have just turned Oblivion into a get-good kind of game? Mm-hmm. Where, like, you actually, that sounds fantastic to me. If, like, if it's explicit in the way the game is structured, that you actually have to, I mean, if you want to make it easier, you have to go out of your way to do these things, to get money to buy a horse, to pack up, and all that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it helps the exploration because, like I said, the way Morrowind does it is that it's, like, immediately, like, here's the other things that you can do. You can't continue on in the storyline until you go do some of those things and level up. Like, go explore the world and then come back and we'll continue on with the campaign. Right. But in Oblivion, it's, like, you can just hammer it through and just do the Amulet of Kings questline and save Martin, and then you're up at Cloud Ruler Temple, and then you're hunting down. Now you start getting there with like hunting down artifacts, but like none of this has directed you to anything else. This is all keeping you focused on the quest, and that's it. It's not encouraging you to go level up. You know, go join the Fighters Guild and level up for a little bit. So that way, because I don't have anything for you right now. You know, this stuff's too dangerous for you, so go explore and gain some experience. It doesn't have that. So it's just, here's this quest line, follow it. And that's just what we get into whenever you have a quest marker. It's just, because people are going to do that. Like, you give them an objective to follow, they will follow that objective, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I also can't help but wonder, and this is maybe another talking point, because for the most part, the Elder Scrolls that have really hit major popularity, like, I guess that would be starting from Morrowind, those have all had a release for console, at least on Xbox. So I also can't help but wonder if anticipating that, I know definitely talking about, once we start talking about Skyrim, like, you can tell that there was an anticipation of the release for console, like, in the way that they made Skyrim. So I just can't help but wonder if some of those things that try and make the game more streamlined, which are catering to a more,
it's catering to forward. A wider audience, really. I mean,
yeah.
Like Daggerfall, all of them, up to Morrowind, were more cult classics.
That's fair.
And Morrowind kind of had more fame and more widespread renown than the others, but it doesn't have as much as, like, you'll find way more people that have played Oblivion than have played Morrowind. And it's just because it's a catering to the general audience, which you'll find that more and more in Bethesda games as you go down the line from, just start from any of them, they get more and more casual. It's just trying to cast that wide net of, like, anyone can pick up this game and play it and immediately have fun and enjoy, and you can just be good at it. You don't have to think too hard about anything. You can literally just go swing a rock at people and kill them, and it's satisfying. There's that immediate gratification of just being able to pick it up and do stuff. Whereas with Morrowind, you could totally fuck yourself within character creation.
I think that it definitely, making some of these changes, it could help make these games more approachable for people who aren't really in the series, but I can already see that some of these different changes that they'll make, when casting this wide net, as you're saying, like, it's designed to contribute, it's designed to be approachable for everybody, but for a lot of us who are more sort of not necessarily the hardcore RPG goers or gamers or anything like that, but, you know, for those people who want those more RPG style tropes, you know, I could see why it would be very disappointing.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think it's very different also. I mean, I think the first time that I ever played Oblivion and I actually started giving a shit as far as to what was going on in there, and I wasn't just interested in, like, what I could do with the world, which is something I just keep coming back to. I mean, it was helpful, and I don't think I had a very thematic approach to, like, oh, they're giving me a quest marker, am I going to follow it, am I not? I think I would just, all right, well, I'm going to follow this and talk to a couple people, but then I'm at this place, so I might as well steal a horse, and then in running away from the guards and all that, it'll just take me somewhere, and I don't know, there was a very organic way that the game took itself, but now, again, looking at it, I start to question things like that. But
yeah, because I mean, it's like okay, I want to explore versus Morrowind's go explore. It's a subtle difference. I mean, I don't know anyone who has literally just gone on rails and played one of Bethesda's games. It's just not, I mean, that's not how you play RPGs anyways, but the almost like freedom to kind of, it's like a subtle, like a nudging you towards more. It's like, hey, we have more to that than just this. Like there's these more. And you know what, Skyrim kind of does it better than Oblivion does as far as showing you other things in the world that's going on. But yeah, let's move on to I want to talk about probably the best part of any Elder Scrolls game ever, which is the Dark Brotherhood quest line. Probably I don't know anyone who would disagree with me that the Dark Brotherhood quest line in Oblivion is some of the best gaming that you can do ever. Dark Brotherhood starts you off, like, if you murder someone, the next time you go to sleep, there's this guy who just is there. He's like, oh, hey, you sleep pretty well for a murderer. Well, by the way, I'm with this group, and you know, if you're just the murdering type, why don't you just get paid to do it as well? Here's almost like an initiation contract. Go kill this guy and then come here and we'll take you in. And it's
brilliant. Oh,
God, don't.
It's brilliant because you know players are gonna do it anyway. Because it's such an integral part of Elder Scrolls games or free to play, not free to play, jeez, open world of open world games. Like, you know, people are gonna want to interact with the world and push its limits and stuff like that. And it's such a seamless entry for an entire landscape of quests and experiences and items and all kind of stuff like that. That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like how it's technically something that you could theoretically miss out on, right? And I think that's what makes an individual's experience more, you know, kind of special and unique, is like, if you were just like a saint and you didn't kill anybody, it's like you wouldn't even know about that. And exactly. Then you can talk to somebody else about their adventure where they had the fucking murder people quest line, and you're like, oh fuck, that's a whole thing I didn't even notice was there, but I did this whole thing that you didn't even know was there. So I kind of like that sort of, oh, you could have missed it, and most people won't, but the fact that you can makes a unique experience.
Definitely. And like, there's the quest line is, it's just really good writing too, like the with the whole traitor and the Dark Brotherhood, and they get you to murder everyone. Yeah. By the end, it's you and like two or three other people that are left in the in the Dark Brotherhood quest line, because this other person tricked you into killing all of your brothers, and you didn't know. Like, you killed the Hand, you killed the Speaker, you killed Lucian is, I think, the Speaker. He gets killed by other Dark Brotherhood members because they thought that he was the traitor. It's just like, it's so kooky because, like, you're like, there's this whole conspiracy in this dark underground cult with all of these weird people, like, really interesting characters. It's just such a... And then the quests that they give you are really unique as well, because there's always, okay, yeah, you can just go up there and kill someone, or I can, as they're sitting by their fireplace, I can sneak in above and like loosen the mount to like this moose, and like it'll fall and kill them. And then there's the murder party that you have to go to, where everyone gets locked into a house, and you have to slowly murder everyone. And the most fun part is being able to do it without any of them noticing that you're the murderer, means that it's like you and two other people, and you can get the person, one of the people who trusts you, and it's like, oh yeah, the other person's the murderer. It's like, let's go kill them. And then you team up, you gang up on this second to last person, and then whenever they're dead, you're just like, oh yeah, by the way, it was me. And they're like, no. And then you just like, you, yeah. And then they ragdoll Featherfall to the ground like all the bodies do in Oblivion. It's just so many cool little quests. It's just so good. I'm excited to go back and play that quest line. Mm-hmm. I just love it. Another good quest line that I enjoyed was the Thieves Guild quest line. I don't know if anyone's played that through.
I don't remember it, actually. I don't remember that one, and I don't think I remember Fighter's Guild either.
Fighter's Guild is good, but the Thieves Guild is also one of those things that you can just completely miss. Like, you don't have to know about it. I forget how you even start it, because now I just know where to go and how to start it. But mm-hmm. in order to figure out what to do, I think you have to like follow rumors about the Gray Fox and the Thieves Guild and like interview like beggars and someone eventually spills the beans or someone's like, oh yeah, they meet here at the docks like every night at like 12 o'clock or something like that. Or you might find the doyen that initiates you, and then your first quest is to your initiation quest, which you can fail your initiation quest, sort of, is a race to go steal this guy's diary out of his house with you and two other people. And if you're not quick enough, someone else will steal it before you. So then your quest turns into steal it from her. And it's just, it's so great. And you later get quests from the Gray Fox himself. And you're having to steal, like, these weird items, like Boots of Spring Hill Jack, and I'm trying to think of other stuff. Like these just all these just different items that you have to go take. And it turns out, like, your last quest, he's like, oh yeah, by the way, we're gonna be stealing a Elder Scroll from the Imperial Library. And you're like,
what?
So then you have to use all those items that you've been stealing in your this big heist to go steal the Elder Scroll, the Declaration of Independence.
Where's Nicolas Cage?
Yeah, and it's also interesting because I think this is how it is in Morrowind as well. It's just that sneaking in Morrowind is actually broken and doesn't really work that well, so I'd never do it.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to keep getting quests in, keep getting jobs in Thieves Guild, you have to steal more stuff and sell it and fence it. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to fence a certain amount of gold in order to get quests. It's just something fun because it's like, yeah, just go ransack random houses and sell that stuff, and then we'll let you have more jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, and it's brilliant because what are you doing in any of those scenarios? You're having a completely unscripted but still relevant gameplay exploration experience because, like, I mean, even just, like, go to Bruma, break into every single house. Yes, they're all architecturally and aesthetically the same, but everybody's got something else going on, and it's like, and then it becomes a fun task of, like, all right, I'm going to steal, like, your object. I'm going to break into your house, get to know you, and then look for something here that's definitively yours.
Yeah. And then it also gives you, like, one of the most awesome items ever, the Gray Cowl, which, like, it basically lets you have an alter ego. So you do all your... So what happens is that as soon as you put on the Gray Cowl, you immediately have 1,000 gold bounty. Just because it's like everyone's always looking for you and you're the Gray Fox.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do is you just put it on, do all of your dirty deeds, all of your murdering and stealing, run out of the city, take it off, and you have no bounty.
That's really cool.
Another thing that is probably one of the coolest things ever is the Shivering Isle DLC.
Yeah.
Have y'all played the Shivering Isle DLC?
Yes.
So the Shivering Isles DLC is an entire new continent jam-packed with just quirky people. It's Sheogorath is the Daedric Prince of Madness. So this is his realm. So there's a lot of crazy shit just going on all the time. And I love it. It's really colorful in some areas. Like the mania side is really colorful. And the... What is it? It's like mania and dementia. Yes. And dementia is like all black and bleak. And it's... Oh God, it's just so good.
It's done so well.
There's so many interesting characters, especially in the what is New Sheogorath, the main city. There's so many kooky characters in there. They all have something messed up with them. I still remember the guy who you can't understand him. Like he just says Galberstamit, like
yeah.
And you have to steal like the fork of her reputation, which is just this fork that just. I don't know why. It's just a fork, and it allows you to understand the guy. For some reason, there's this guy who collects calipers and tongs. So he's just like, bring me all the calipers and tongs you can, because he's making like a flying machine or something like that. it's
a writer's dream. I mean, like you get into a room with a bunch of your coworkers, and you sit down and write a quest that's in this particular new part of the world, and you just get to go off the handle, just whatever you want. I mean, and it's that it's been mentioned on the show before, but the strokes of brilliance that happen with video game companies often come where there's like, all right, you know what, don't give a shit, just do it and be creative.
Oh, yeah.
and you can come up with something that's so absolutely unique. It's brilliant.
I just wish that there was more writing like that and more content like that.
Yeah. For sure.
It's just forget the arena.
Oh, the arena, Okay, so So the arena. So going back to the episode, so the last episode where we were talking about arena and how the game started out as you were just this like gladiator fighter that just goes around and fighting, and then it turned into a full-blown RPG. Well, they actually brought it back for Oblivion. Like they brought, you have the arena in Oblivion in the Imperial City, and it gets tough. There's one fight that I remember is the hardest fight in the whole thing. Is you fighting three Argonian prisoners, and one of them has a sword, and what sucks is that they're just always on you and always hitting you, and you just have to sit there and just take your lumps.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many times where it's like, as soon as I get there, I'm like, okay, I have to go out, lift some weights, level up a few times, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to wipe the floor with them. And then the Grand Champion, the guy that you have to usurp, he gives you a quest to go find out his true parentage, and if you do it, he finds out he's a half vampire, and he's like, I don't want to go on anymore. So like whenever you actually fight him for like the role of the title of Grand Champion, he just sits there. He's just like, kill me. You're just like, okay.
Yeah, it's really disheartening.
I really truly do love Oblivion. It's I don't have as many hours in it as I do Skyrim, but I'm gonna say here are the low points of Oblivion. The caves are fucking awful. Every single cave is the same bleak goddamn cave. They all look the same. You can't tell. You don't know what's gonna be in it, and it's most likely just gonna be gobbles and bandits and rats anyways. And then you get the Aeliad ruins, which the Aeliads are like an ancient elf race they built the White Gold Tower in Imperial City. And those also bleak, bland, all look the same. So you run into those issues a lot with Oblivion, is the dungeon crawling leaves a lot to be desired because all the dungeons look the same. And this is like before this whole Skyrim way of making dungeons where they loop back on themselves. Like, this is just go one way until you can't go anymore and then just head back out. And it's really boring. So that's probably like the low point of Oblivion. And I think we're coming up to our hour point for the episode. Let's get some closing thoughts in and let's try to wrap this up.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, something that I'll mention just to keep the continuity of talking about the Elder Scrolls games throughout these three episodes is that maybe if our low points about Oblivion, and especially the low points about in Skyrim with the Draugr caves and things like that just get really repetitive. You know, we kind of ended up talking about that in the last episode with Daggerfall too. So maybe it's just something about having a big world and trying to fill it up. I don't know. Maybe sometimes copying and pasting is is an easier way out. But to just mention something going on in Oblivion for me and in the Elder Scrolls as a whole, the mechanics and the AI system in there are absolutely fantastic. Because I mean, regardless of even in Skyrim, regardless of like the amount of immersion that you get from talking to people in there, just the idea of having a populated area. It does so much for the game, and especially to know that in something like Oblivion, the devs encountered this issue where since the AI system in there, you know, like the guards need to eat because they're human and they're set for all these different structures and paths and things like that. So in the jails, they would run out of food, and so they would end up breaking into the jail cells and killing the prisoners and taking their food. And so what the devs did was just give the guards more food. And to me, that speaks volumes onto like what you're doing when you have created an AI scheme like that. It's just, it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And talking about the mechanics, I guess we didn't talk about that. So we kind of harped on the fact that Morrowind and before was all like kind of dice roll based combat. Well, in Oblivion, you actually get actual combat. Like, swing your sword, they either block it or they get hit or you miss. Like, if you don't actually make contact with their body, welcome change. Welcomed change.
Yeah,
you can manually block with your shield. It's no longer dice roll combat, and it actually just feels so much better. Ugh. Love it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I have a pet peeve for dice roll combat. I don't like randomness. That's even in strategy games where it's like, oh, that's the thing that kind of balances it out. I still kind of hate it because it feels like shit. So very, very welcome changed indeed.
All right, let's get some let's close out. So let's get some either social meets or something.
Well, we could also do our best Have You Heard of the Elves impression.
Oh, God. All right. You start it.
Have you heard of the elves?
All right. That was good. Good Kevin, one. You next.
Wait, are we guys?
I don't even know what I'm referencing.
Same. What are we doing?
Have you heard of the high elves?
I think as a good closing remark is that with all these different games, you can absolutely appreciate and see how it grows off of itself. You know, I think that you can take the sort of the more negative sides of Oblivion with grains of salt, because for me, you know, sure, I think the only true downsides for the game for Oblivion gameplay wise was that there were some things that were a little uninteresting, but it's such a massive area and there's so much immersiveness involved in it that I think it's probably, I would consider it the best of the series.
Have you heard of the High Elves?
Right. Yeah. Let's close out. Dominic, hit us with some social meets.
Absolutely. So, for those of you who'd like to follow us on social media, you can catch our Twitter on tombstone_pod. Our Instagram is tombstone_podcast. If you'd like to check out our main distributor page, it's we are hosted by Anchor, so that's going to be anchor.fm/tombstone-podcast. If you'd like to make donations or even just support our channel in any way other than following, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, that'd be super helpful, or you can actually make a monetary donation at anchor.fm/tombstone-podcast/support. And I think that that about covers it. Our Twitch is the same, tombstone_podcast, and we stream Saturdays and check out episodes every Wednesday.
Yep, I stream every now and then on Twitch TV. Find me Senior Baze. Yeah, I don't know if anyone else wants to plug. I think we plug a lot.
Yeah, I think we've pretty much covered it.
I think I'm
good. You can Kevin's Janky Cast, and you can follow him on Twitch, Janky Manky. So, yeah.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Goodbye.
Later.
Farewell.